Welcome to episode 61 of The Lab. I'm your host, Brad Barton. Long, long ago, there was a cloud of dust and gas, mostly hydrogen and helium, with about 2% of just about everything else on the periodic table. One of many articles I have on the show page, which you can find by visiting thelabwithbrad.com, is about how we got heavier elements, such as titanium, silver, and gold, in the cloud that eventually became our solar system. The only force that causes the collapse of a nebula is gravity. It may be initiated by radiation pressure or the shockwave from a nearby supernova, like apparently happened with our system. But then it takes its own gravity to keep collapsing. There are, however, several forces which resist the collapse. For example, there's angular momentum. If you've ever played with a fidget spinner, and you've noticed that it has a tendency to keep spinning once spinning, and that if you try and tilt it, it resists that motion. This tendency to keep spinning once spinning and resist tilting is called angular momentum. A spinning object of a given size, when decreased in size, in order to conserve angular momentum, will spin faster. Conversely, when it gets larger, conserving angular momentum again, the rate of spin decreases. The faster something is spinning, the more centrifugal force it feels, the tendency to be pushed outward towards the rim of the spin, away from the axis. As a cloud of dust and gas collapses toward becoming a star, the angular momentum tends to form it into a disk of spinning material. And in the center, where most mass ends up, it can end up spinning quite quickly. In fact, if there is too much angular momentum, it will tear itself apart. Another resistor to the collapse of a nebula is temperature. Just like angular momentum, heat is conserved, so that if you take a given system with a given amount of heat energy and decrease it in size, its temperature rises. The hotter something is, the more it wants to expand. Whereas when a given system with a given amount of energy expands, it will tend to cool. As the nebula collapses, especially the center, it forms what's called a protostar. Various delicate balances will occur between forces of angular momentum, temperature, and gravity. And as the heat increases, you also get ionization effects. This means that electrons are being stripped away from the nucleus of atoms within the cloud. In the case of hydrogen, which is the most abundant element anyway, this means you end up with naked protons. Protons, all having a positive electric charge, don't really like to get close to each other. A spinning electric charge creates a magnetic field. The magnetic field will interact with the rest of the disk, and the protostar, having an even stronger stellar wind than main sequence stars, stars that have initiated their fusion reaction, will end up interacting magnetically with the disk. This puts the brakes on the spinning, and it will tend to lose angular momentum and transfer it to the outer disk. That magnetic field can also cause jets of material to shoot out from the star, its poles, either end. If you've ever taken a bar magnet and put it under a sheet of paper with iron filings on it, you'll notice it forms sort of concentric rings. Michael Faraday called them lines of flux. There are gaps where material can be expelled. That's an extremely simplified explanation. They have actually observed these jets and they can reach pretty high velocities, more than enough to escape the gravity of the nebula forever. This allows the protostar to shed heat and continue its collapse. A protostar can actually get hotter than it will be when it reaches its main sequence, but it doesn't initiate fusion until it's also dense enough. Protons don't want to get close to each other. To hit and fuse, they have to be going fast enough, and there have to be so many around that any time the electric charge pushes a proton away from another proton, it's also getting pushed towards yet another proton. The collapse of a protostar is not a smooth ride. The various forces interact and oppose one another, so that the star may collapse somewhat, heat up, then expand, cool down, and collapse again. The star could collapse, increase its spinning, throw off some material, slow down and collapse further, or expand, throw off some material, slow down, and collapse. This causes shock waves to travel out into the rest of the disk. The rest of the disk is called a protoplanetary disk. Just like a protostar is a star that isn't quite a star yet, the protoplanetary disk is an area that isn't quite planets yet. May or may not manage to do the trick. The shock waves of material being pushed out away from the protostar can cause local areas of extra density, which may be the trigger that causes collapses in the rest of the disk that eventually form planets. In addition, protostars, during later stages of their development, kick out quite a bit of radiation, ultraviolet, even X-rays. This is ionizing radiation, as the name suggests. When an atom encounters enough ionizing radiation, it will become an ion, meaning that its electrons may be stripped away from the nucleus, at least temporarily. This can cause some interesting chemical reactions, which we will talk about next time.